Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein here in the Yeshiva Shalmaila.
Nice to be back after a week off. You know, it's a lot of work to do these every week. So I would like to try to get some substitute, either Rabbanim or other Askanim, etc. So if you have a suggestion, somebody you think would be good at it, please call us or email us, and we'll definitely take it under advisement. This week, we're going to have a wonderful program. We're going to be talking about kashrus and shechita. We're going to be speaking to Reb Chaim Baruch Kushner, our very famous shechit for many years, an Isaac in kashrus. We will be speaking to Rabbi Aryeh Deren. We're going all around. We're going to Lakewood, Muncie, Chabad. We're going to be speaking to Rabbi Baruch Mordechai Spiegel, a Gera Chassid who runs a shul in Lakewood, is a Sheikhid for many decades. We will be speaking to Rabbi Yehuda Shein, international kashrus consultant, and we will, lastly, Rabbi Baruch Epstein, who runs actually a supermarket that sells kosher meat, and we'll be talking to him. And the topic is going to be Beis Yosef, Chassidish, Litvish, OU, even Hebrew National. What is the difference between the different shechitas? Are you getting your value? Now, I want to start off with an opening. This is clearly not an attempt to either diminish or any particular shechita. It's more about knowing where are you getting a value and what are you as a consumer paying for, both in, well, primarily in kashrus. We're not going to be talking about quality of food. We're talking about in kashrus. This is a very important program to anybody who consumes meat.
Now for our weekly riddle. This week is Parshas Tzitzis, so we're going to ask two riddles for Parshas Tzitzis. One is, the Gemara says, by Tzitzis, your person zekeli van vayu, so you should have Tzitzis Noah and Talis Noah. Having a nice Talis is zekeli van vayu. If you have a nice talis, you have nice tzitzis, you have, you know, just together, it makes a beautiful mitzvah. So the question is, why don't we say the same thing, zekeli van vayu, you should have a mezuzah noah, and together with the mezuzah noah, you should have a bayis noah. And we don't see anybody says that you should have a bayis noah, a zekeli van vayu of the mezuzah. What's the difference between tzitzis on the talus or mezuzah on the bayis? Here's another question. And this question is from the Magen Avraham, the great Magen Avraham. He says that the Shulchan Aruch, I don't have a Shulchan Aruch with me, I'm traveling today, but I think it's Simon Ches says that the Beis Yosef says, if you take your talus off, afilu daite lachzer, even if you want to immediately put it back on, you're going to the bathroom, you take your talus off, what's the halacha? You make another bracha, even if your mind is to put it right back on. Frek the Magen Avraham, he says, so what's it different? By sukkah, if you left the sukkah and you want to come back, the Shulchan Aruch says, the Beis Yosef says, you don't make another bracha. It's not a hefsek. You want to come back. But by tzitzis, he says, if you took it off, even if you want to put it back on, it's considered a hefsek. By when you intend to do it again, by sukkah, it's not a hefsek, but by tzitzis, it is a hefsek. What is the difference? This is the Magen Avraham's question on the great Beis Yosef. Do you have an answer?
Before we go to our program, I would like to say a short word on the Parsha. The Meraglim, the chait of the Meraglim, which because of that, they did not go into Eretz Yisrael. And it's one of the two times where the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, once by the Egel, he says, Heref mimeni v'ashmidem, I will destroy them. And here he does it again. There's some, the only two places, there's something particularly pernicious about the chait ha-Meraglim. And I would suggest to you, the chait ha-Meraglim was ultimately about, they said, loy nuchal, we can't. We just can't. We're not able to. The little engine that couldn't. And here's what's so ironic. When you look about why couldn't the Meraglim, why couldn't they? Why did they say, I can't? And it's important because so many of us at different points in our lives have been stuck by some type of a challenge where we just looked at it in the eye and we said, you know what? I can't. We went home to our mother, to our father, Tao friends, Tao spouses, sometimes just in solitude, and we just shed a tear, just like the Meraglim did. And they said, we can't, we're terrified. And I put to you, if you had to name one cause for a person's inability to become who they're supposed to be, what has stopped you, what has stopped me from ever becoming what we were supposed to be? If we had to point the finger at one thing, I would say it's fear. Loi lefachid klalik, Rav Nachman said, loi nuchal, we can't, we're afraid. And let's look at the fear. Let's look at most of our fears. Look at the Meraglim. What did they say? They said they went to Eretz Yisrael and they saw Orim Bitsurais Gedolos Moed, great fortress cities. The Gam, among them, there were also Yelidei HaAnak, giants, sons of giants, for Inusham. And then when they're criticized, they come back and they double down. Look at this. He says, Kalam. Now everybody, it went from, look how in our minds, how fears just keep on growing and growing. They become bigger in our imagination. Kalam, now it didn't say some of them. Anshe Midas. Rashi says, what does Anshe Midas? They were giants. Imagine, you know, that chabura you're going to give, that job you're going to take, everybody around you is 10 times your size. Giants. You're 5'9", and they're not 5'11". They're 12'11". Every one of them is bigger than an NBA player or stronger than an NFL player. And v'nehi b'neu k'chagavim, it wasn't like, you know, they had a 2-inch edge on us or a 10 IQ or a little bit of an edge. We're grasshoppers next to them. And this is what they thought of us. They were terrified. They were huge. They looked at us as tiny little ants, Rashi says. And then in Devarim, it keeps getting bigger. This fear just keeps on morphing and metamorphosizing and growing. What happened to the Betsurais Gedolos Moed, their mighty fortresses? It's like they had somebody, you know, from the United States, from Northrop Grumman, building them fortresses. All they used was sticks and stones in those days. Now it got even bigger. In Devarim, it becomes Arim Gedolos, big cities, Ubetsurais Bashamayim. They reached the heavens. When we take our fears at night under our covers, they just keep growing and growing and growing, and we keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Now, let's imagine if you could think of what the other person thought of you. You're terrified of this huge monster with endless resources. Now, look at the other side. In the Haftarah this week, it says when the spies, they went to Rachav, and they said, what were we thinking about when we heard Klal Yisrael was coming? Right? Remember, the spies went to Eretz Yisrael. They saw these huge... Now, what were the people in Eretz Yisrael who they thought we looked like grasshoppers? They said to them, we looked like grasshoppers. What were they thinking about us, these giants? They said, Vanishma Vayimas Levavenu, she writes. She says, we heard what they had accomplished, the Jews. Vayimas Levavenu, we melted. We became like water. We fell down on the floor in fright. There was b'ish b'ptechem. Here's what's so ironic. In my eyes, in your eyes, the fears, they get bigger and bigger. The people are stronger. And in their eyes, they think punked by carrot. So what is it? It's all a myth. Most of our fears, right, are eingeret. And if we wrote them down in a piece of paper and we said, what are you afraid of? A, B, and we started reasoning with our fears. Write them down on paper. We start to see they're really silly. That person you're terrified of, I guarantee you, I promise you, he gets up in the morning, he puts on his pants one leg at a time, right? He gets up in the morning and he says, oh my gosh, what a day. How am I going to accomplish what I have to do today? Impossible. Just like you. Here's a story. There was a city in the Midwest, Omaha, and it's one of the great train depots in the country. It's sort of in the center west of the country. So in one of these great train yards where they transport these cars, you know, of grain and coal and all kinds of commodities across the whole continent, there was one guy, We'll call him Simon, and he was negative guy. He's the type of guy who said, you know, let's go for a walk tomorrow. He'll say it was going to rain. He said, you know, let's go play baseball. They're going to beat us. Let's do everything. He had a negative story for. He was Mr. Fearful. So what did he do? His job was to clean out the rail cars after they would come in. They would come in from San Francisco. He would sweep them out. Boom. And he was always sure something terrible would happen to him. One day he sweeps out this car. It's come in from someplace down south. And it was a refrigerated car. And on a refrigerated car, you don't want to get locked in, God forbid. So he put like a beam. Usually you put a beam over there. This time he didn't put it right correctly. However, he tried to keep the door open. And he's sweeping. Suddenly he hears a rolling sound, the door, and a click. And the door is closed, and there's no handle from the inside, and it's a refrigerated car, and the next stop is in Alberta. It's 24 hours away, and he realizes he's going to die. He's in a refrigerated car, goes down to 34 degrees. It's the summer. He's wearing shirt sleeves. Maybe he's wearing shorts and sneakers, and he realizes a person will basically die at 34 outside or 35 for 24 hours. So he sits down on the corner, he starts to cry. And then he takes a piece of paper out of his pocket, a little pad and a pen, and he writes a letter to his family. He writes, I loved everybody. I did my best. I was always afraid. And you know what? The worst really happened. I got locked in a refrigerated car because I wasn't careful enough. And I always knew it was going to happen. I knew that life ends badly. And I knew, despite what people think, your worst fears come true. So here's my goodbye. And he writes a long five to each of his children. Okay. And they come to Alberta. They're emptying the cars. They see one car. They're about to leading the cars. And they see a guy there in a coma. And they take him out and they rush him to the hospital. And the doctors are saying, they said, you know, the man is in a coma in a refrigerated car. But we don't understand why. He obviously was preparing for death because the refrigeration in the car wasn't on the entire time, right? So he went into a coma, a cold-induced coma, in an unrefrigerated car. And what does that mean? If you believe your fears, they do become true. To quote Ford, he said, Henry Ford, he said, if you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right. So two times Rabbeinu Shalom gets mad at Klal Yisrael. One time is when they do the Egel, terrible things, the Koyferin Kaviyachal. And in this parsha, he gets mad at them again for a different kfira. They stopped believing in themselves. They said, Loi Nuchal, we will allow fear to stop us from becoming who we are. So if we want to take a message, a page against the Meraglim, what do? We write down our fears and we say, there's really no corner that can stop us. A person doesn't ever have to be cornered. There's always another opportunity. Three times in the Torah, talks about getting cornered. Lo sechala pas sadcha, right? By a field. You can't shave it down. Let it grow. Let it blossom. Lo sechala pas reishcha. Pay is harosh. The third time in this week's parasha, Hakonaf psil tchelis, on the corner of your beged, it should sprout forth tzitzis. And what does that mean? Why is the Torah telling us? You think you're cornered? You think it's an end? You reached a corner? There's no place for it? No, it's not a corner. It's a new junction. There's a new opportunity there. So every corner, something has to sprout out of the corner. We look past corners. We look past edges. We're never over the edge. We're just opening a new window. The tzitzis habeged, they sprout forward. You thought it was the end, it wasn't. The tzitzis hasadeh, the corner of the sadeh, pas sadcha, pas reishcha. A yid never, ever has a corner. That is the tikkun of the chet ha-meraglim. Write down your worst fears. Say, how are they really so scary? Is it really a dead end? Or can I just use it as an opportunity, a junction, to learn something new, to go past, conquer that fear? That is the message of the meraglim. Let's go to our wonderful guests. We have on the phone with us Rabbi Baruch Chaim Kushner, a Talmud of Tells, Long Beach, South Fallsburg, Lakewood. He's a Shaykhid for over 36 years. Welcome, Rabbi Kushner. I'm sorry, 26 years. Welcome, Rabbi Kushner.
Shalom Aleichem, Rav David.
Sir, Rabbi Rechaim, tell us a little bit about what do you know about Chassidish Shechita?
Chassidish Shechita is not any different than any other Shechita. The Pasha, the types of Chassidish Shechita, I would say, would mean that the Shechit is a Chassidish Shechit. And if it's, he's like Minhagim for the Chassidish Shechita. And he's machmer on certain things that others wouldn't be machmer on. You know, that's basically what it should be. That's basically what it's all about.
Are there any nafkaminas on halacha? Like, you know, originally the Baal Shem and the Magid, they made a big tumult about
sakinim,
latushim, etc.
Yeah. There was a machlokes about that, which is interesting because the Torah held with the Sakinim Lutoshim. The Alter Rebbe in his life, the Baal HaTanya, in his letters, brings down the Goyin that he also holds like that. And the Pinchas Kovetzel, which was Achsidisha, was against it. So it's not a clear-cut definition in Achsidisha Shchita. The Machlokes then was Be'ike because there was the Chassidish Shochtim made their own Shechita Nefredes from the regular Kehillah Shechita. And with that, it was like making a pgam on the Friedrich Shechita. So that's where a lot of people were against it, because you're being Meitzelaz on the Friedrich. And that was, you know, this only a Chumrah, but the Zach. So they didn't want to take away from the Friedrich. But the Goyim held from it, and today everybody has who's Sukkinim with Latashim. Everybody's using him.
And are there any nafkaminas in the Bedikas that they do, in the Reyes, that they do by Chassidisha or not Chassidisha Shechita?
Not as far as I know, I don't know of anything that the Chassidisha are more marked than the Litvisha or than Yeshivisha. I mean, the Chassidisha, every place, every Hokim had their Menhokim, that's sure. The Hungarians had their Menhokim, and the Litvisha, and the Chassidisha, everybody had their own different Menhokim. But to say that Chassidisha are Chassidim, no, I would not say so.
And you're saying today everybody uses the Sakinim Lutashim, the thin knives.
Yes,
I think Aruch HaShulchan already brings in Siman Yud Ches that he says today
everybody uses it. It was not a Shaila in Kashrus, really. It was a Shaila being Poikim Gehen at the Friedrich Mahalach, that's all.
So is the whole difference then that whether somebody is there who has a long beard and a garthel and somebody has a short beard and not a garthel?
In Halacha, no.
So is that the whole difference? That here there's a guy from Lakewood or from some other community, and over here it's somebody with a gartel. Is that today the essence of the difference of a Chassidish Shechita?
In honest truth, you're saying is true. It just can't be said that way because they want to have somebody that fears with the Chassidish Mahalach and Levim. So basically, I'll give you just a few points that's on the top of my head. In Shechita itself, the Chassidim are more makbid, I mean the Hungarian more, I should say. I don't care the Chassidim, it depends which Chassidim also. Makbid on Amaritas Noitzit, to flick the feathers before Shechita. Now, Bemis Meritas Noitzit are halacha. The question is only when do you need it. So the Chassidim were more machmer even when it's very small feathers, and the Chassidim, the Litvisha, and the Litvisha weren't so machmer when it's very, very small feathers. So the other says, now the Ramo says not to do it. The Ramo says, in fact, he's not allowed to do it. The Aki Moshe brings down that to the other God that it's an issue because it's Tabal Lechaim, but it's not needed. So it's brought down in Chov Dalid, or the Simcha Chov Dalid in Brites Noitzis, and in Chov Gimel it's brought down only that you should make a shvil, that you shouldn't cut the Noitzis together with the Shechita. Basically, the only thing that I could think of that the Chassidim are marked with in Etzim Shechita is Brites Noitzis, and also they're also marked with that the Chassidim should know well the Simla Chadasha for the Tvua Shor. They wanted that the Shachtim should be doubled in the Lashon for Tvua Shor because it's up to Kabbalah from Baal Shem Tov or something from Tzadikim or Tzadikim, whatever, I think from Baal Shem Tov, that whoever has the Tvua Shor's Lashon, the Simla Chadasha on his Lashon, won't be Nichshol in his Shchita. But you know the other under you know literature a little more based off it. But Simcha Chadasha is a staple poetic in Shchita by everybody. No one's arguing with that. Just that they wanted it more, they shouldn't look into other svarim. The only thing is hard. Simcha Chadasha and Ritzis Noitzis and Sakirim Lutoshim, I could say is maybe Kozelberg has their own hakpada, not the shecht, only if you're holding it on the hand. But that's a different reason. That's nothing to do with etzem din shchita. That's a thing because they don't want to, you know, they have because the altar close to the Rebbe was marked with that because you didn't want it should be like a mass production kind of thing. I presume. In other words, but not in the hilchish shchita. That I can't think of anything else that would be a difference between chassidim and misnagdim for namo. The chassidim beikah started this Indian in America. It's because the shochtim and a little sure shochtim weren't makbet to have a beard and payas, and they wanted the tzniyas of the and then you know the Indian or the takonas of tzniyas from the wife and the house should be you know they wanted that the Hungarians and other were makbet that the lady should shave, you know the wife should shave, others were makbet not to go with a certain shaitlach and that the wife shouldn't drive, but that all came later. In Satma, the marshal, there were more makbet that they should have today if against Zionists. In Square, the marshal, the only makbet hakpad is that they're different than anybody else, that the shaykh shouldn't drive. What should they want the shaykh to go to the Tautzel and should be makbet go to mikveh, and he should have the levush of a chosid. You know, the bush means from inside out and outside in, the Dalai Hakima. And today now there's a new thing that anybody who has a smartphone can check. And the Babish, they want market all these things. They want market more that the chosid should be someone that learns chassidus.
So, Rabbi Krishna, what is the difference in price between chassidus shechita and not chassidus? Do you have any idea now?
Well, Rav David, if you could find me not a chassidus shechita, let me get it. I don't see it. Everyone dropped out of it. The OU, the Starkei, everybody dropped out.
Why did they drop out?
Well, that's really political. I can't answer that question. In other words, they took over, so finish. There's nothing else. You know, there is nothing else. I mean, in chicken, I'll go upon them.
Why today is there only chassidus shechita? What's the logic? In New York, at least.
Because of the consumers. The consumer wants it. The consumer, first of all, most people understand
I'm saying, do most people care about whether the wife of the sheikh has shaved their head or in Skvera that the sheikh doesn't drive? Like, is this to people an important issue in the Yerushalayim of the sheikh?
I'll tell you. In those kehilas that were brought up that you're not a full Jew unless you do that, I guess so. In other words, let me explain what I mean. In let's say in Germany, 150 years ago, if it would be a sheikh that didn't have a beard, I'm sure no one would have a problem with it. Why? Because no one had a beard. So what's the problem? But in a place where everybody had a beard and someone didn't have a beard, so that shows that the Yerushalayim is lacking according to the standards that they wanted, right? So it depends in the place. It depends where, how, when, and where. So now, when the Hungarians came to America, they saw a sheikh without a beard, so they knew they were like they never saw such a thing, never heard of such a thing. So it became possible for those places that they never had a problem with having a beard. In other words, those places where they always shaved, it was not a problem. The Frumidas would have a beard also. What's the problem? What's it's enough kamina. Now in Hungary and in those kind of prestigious places, the sheikh went like the Rav. Come on, you're like a second in command, like the Rav. He went with a Shtaimel even. He went even though the Amoinam did not go a Shtaimel in Hungary. The only place with Amoinam when a Shtaimel was in Yerushalayim. But in Hungary, but the Baal Pasha, the Baal Pasha did not go a Shtaimel. But a Sheikh had gegangen a Shtaimel. A Sheikh went with a beard and face, you know, out. It was different than a Baal Pasha. It was considered someone that has to be more nizer, more choshev looking, and more attacker. His hastaka should be choshev. So, that's how it was by the chassidish.
I think that when we say that chassidish shechita is better, if people think that it's because, there were chumris in the shechita, which I think most people believe is the case, which there aren't any, as you say.
Well,
it's one thing.
Let me conclude.
Yeah. If people think that it's because of chumrish in the shechita, it's one thing. But if somebody thinks it's because a certain community has a different level of Yerushalayim, so we're not eating litvish shechita because their wives don't shave their heads and the men do drive. I mean, none of these things, they're not even deraisis, they're not derabbanan.
You have a kasha, how could it be that he should be he, that these minhagim are more chomer than deraisis? Lighter, that's the fact.
Rabbi Krishna, let me ask you another thing. The essence of the machlekes, which was the Baal Shem and the Magid with the sakinim melutashim,
yeah,
is brought in the poskim of that time that it's because of tzar balachayim, right? That they said that the sakinim ha'avim, right, were halakim but not chadim. They were they cut with, they didn't cut
there
with.
Are
the,
those,
let me,
those,
Rabbi Krishna, I have a question. Okay, so they said that it was the chumrah of Yerushalayim of Tzar Belachayim. Right, they bring from the Darki Moshe and others that the chumrah of Tzar Belachayim by Shechita. Yeah. My question is, when I saw some of the films of that they put out with Chassidish Schlachtheisen, the quote-unquote Chassidish Schlachtheisen, and the reason Peter put films out is because the Tzar B'Lechayim was horrific. If we wanted to be makbid on the Yerushalayim of the Sakinim Melutashim, which was the Yisraelim, and we wanted to have real Chassidish Shechita, wouldn't the Tzar B'Lechayim become... Isn't that the essence of it? Or, for example, you go sometimes where they're doing a kaparis, and you see the chickens are out there 3 days before, they're not fed, they don't have water, they're karav tamisa, and they take these chickens for kaparis. Shouldn't Chassidus Shechita say, wait, the whole Yisrael of Chassidus Shechita is Tzar B'Lechayim. This is the biggest Tzar B'Lechayim imaginable. Haven't we somehow distorted the whole message of what the Baal Shem and the Magid and the Baal HaTanya writing out, and we created a mavucha where we have the minig without any of the message that came along with it?
I agree to most of what you just said. In fact, any chassidish shoychet, I'm saying chassidish bedavka, that works in the shlachtos, in the times before Yom Kippur, from Gedalia till after Yom Kippur, will be very negative to what's going on with kapparot, because we get all those chickens that people make above us, and it comes to us, and we see what these chickens look like. It's gefährlich.
Define gefährlich. What does gefährlich mean?
Gefährlich means that they most of them are dead before Shechita. Most of them they stink gefährlich. They're not fed. They're not that clean. They're most of them are treifus. Mamish most. I'm not being megazim. I could prove everything I'm saying now that most of them are treifus. Very few of them come out kosher, and I would say it's very inhumane and very unhealthy to give these chickens to people to eat.
So this is the hepech of what the purpose of Chassidus Shechita was, according to the Baal HaTanya.
That's a different inyan. It's the way that inyan of kaparis is a different problem completely. It's the way it's being done. People want to make money, so they make kaparis in the streets and does. That was not the way it was done. Amol, you went to the shechit and he shechted it. You took it home and you kashed it like you kashed all your chickens, and then you appointed it, and that was it. It was a regular chicken like every other chicken. They're making a business out of it, and because of the business, it's nothing to do with the shechita. They have to do with the business is making the tzar b'lechayim. There's nothing to do with shechita now.
I understand that, but when we shech the chicken that has gone through all these yisurim, right? It's the work, the torture.
Out of misery now.
Yeah, so my point is that you want to be makpid on chesidus shechita, which is tzar b'lechayim. So you starve a chicken for a week. You don't let it go to the bathroom for a week. You don't give it water for a week. And then you have the chesidus shechita. It seems if I was the person eating this chicken, I would say, this is the most unchesidus shechita I ever had in my life. And I understand it's not the shechita itself. It's the message.
I'm not going to argue on that point.
Rabbi Kushner, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, absolutely.
Kultiv. We have on the phone with us from Lakewood, New Jersey, Rabbi Yehuda Shane. He's a Talmud of Beis Medrash Gevaya, Talmud of Shnei Akatrul, Zecharin Levracha. He's a Musmach, Rabbi Leo Levine. He learned Nikur, Kabbalah from Rabbi Landesman. He's a consultant to the international kashrus industry. Welcome, Rabbi Shane.
Shalom Aleichem.
So, Rabbi Shane, could you, as an expert in kashrus, tell us as consumers, we walk into a store, you have chesidus shechita, OU, you have all kinds of private shechitas, you have Beis Yosef. We don't
now
know.
We're talking about poultry or we're talking about meat or
both.
Should we start?
Both. We both? Don't know. I'm an ignorant. I don't know. I don't Kamitz Aleph, Kamitz Beis Bar, I know nothing. I'm an AB Sidarian. Walk me through as a consumer, an expert in. I know nothing. You're an expert in this. What should we, who are people who are Yerei Shamayim, they want to be kashrus, what is better, what is worse, what do they pay extra for, where are they being, you know, necessarily paying and not getting a value for? Educate us.
Okay, so let me go back with a number of years ago, let's say about 30, 35 years ago, there was available to the kashrus industry, there was available glot, non-glot, and some Beis Yosef. There was very little of Beis Yosef, considerably because of there weren't that many Svardim. The OU basically was the one that was given Ashgach on a lot of the plants besides other Rabbonim. They decided about some 20 plus years ago, 25 years ago, that they're eliminating, they're not giving any more Ashgach on non-glot. They're only giving on glot, which basically has caused a tremendous problem in the pricing of meat and what we get. And I'll explain why. The average non-veal beef shechita in the USA, when you make a shechita, you have glot and Beis Yosef is between 12 and 18% of the day's shechita. Non-glot is 25 to 30%. If they would have kept that non-glot, all these people living out in the West, or let's call them the supermarket kosher consumer that knows nothing with no glot, they would have taken that 25-30%, and that would satisfy the amount of meat they need. So first of all, we would have, because of the labor and the shechita and everything else, we would be able to bring down our costs tremendously. And there would not be a shortage of any type of meat of the glot and the Beis Yosef, because all of these other consumers would fall under this other thing of the non-glot 25-30%, which I've addressed this to the OU about 3 years ago, that they really should. So they said, well, that the OU should start a non-glot, the same way like the Rabbanut and Eretz Yisrael. You have the Ada, you have Rabbi Reuben, you have Rabbi Landa, you have Sheris. Those are all the glot and the Beis Yosef and everything else like it. Who's covering for the consumer in Eretz Yisrael the non-glot? That the Rabbanut does. And it's 25-30% of every shechita you have that. We would have that in America. We would solve our problem pricing and amount of meat that we have available for the kosher consumer. We would never run short, even at Yom Tov time. And basically what the OU says, they don't want to go now back to non-glot once they moved up to glot, and they said somebody else should do it. I said, but if you look at the kosher consumer outside in the United States, the golden standard of kosher to them is OU. I said, if you don't have an OU on that piece of meat, on the non-glot piece of meat, you can't put on any other kind of hashgacha. They will not accept it. But
that never happened. Rabbi Shane, so
yes.
Who does non-glot today? Just who
the
is
only one that's doing non-glot today is basically, what is it called, Hebrew National.
So is Hebrew National, and I know nothing about Hebrew National, is Hebrew National kosher but non-glot?
Correct.
And do they have reliable shechtim? Like if somebody was in a desperate pinch, could they eat Hebrew National?
It's a good question, because the real issue of Hebrew National is not the shechtim. The shechtim are of a good quality shechtim. at least it changed when they, in the last couple of years. It's been a good quality shachtim. But they have two things which they do which makes a problem. One thing is that because of bloodshot, that the by shchitas, there's a lot, by the non-kosher shchita, by the treifas, nevelas, they shoot the behemoth in the brain, and then they do, they'll cut the throat or whatever else they'll do. So there is no bloodshot because the blood does not travel in and discolor the meat. The Hebrew National, where they were doing the shechting, the kill, basically the shechting by P&M or other companies, very good companies, they were very concerned about the bloodshot. So what they want to have is they wanted them to shoot the behemoth. So the Moshe has a tshuva on that, that if you shoot it, like not right by the shechita, but a little bit after that, which others have touched up, I don't think the Moshe has an exact amount, a half a minute or a minute, there's no problem using it. But over there, right after the shechita, basically, I'd say 15, 20 seconds later, they shoot it.
When you say
so
they
that
shoot,
makes,
what does it mean they shoot it? I don't know. What
they take a bolt and
right.
they shoot it into the brain, that all function of the animal, the heart and everything, stops at that point. So now no blood is going to go out. Nothing happens. Everything becomes dead end at that point.
So that's they do that post shchita, you're saying?
Post shchita. In the regular treifa kill, nevela, they do it prior to shchita.
So this
and
is
that is the reason why, if you have in Europe and all these other countries, they want to ban shchita because you don't want to stun the animal. They call that stunning. They don't want to stun the animal before shchita.
So Hebrew National does that, but I...
They do it after shchita.
But
and the Moshe writes that you could do it after shchita.
Does any other shlachtais do that? That's a glatschach.
No. Nobody else is doing it. There's one more item that the U.S. government wants them, the USDA wants them to wash down the meat to prevent pathogens. They want them to wash down the meat with hot water, which makes a problem before melicha to have hot water. So what they're doing by Hebrew National is they wash it down from the non-kosher hair for the behemoth down to the kosher. So when the water reaches down to the kosher part, it has cooled down that much that it's not no yatzeh lettuce or anything close to that, so they feel it's not a problem. But most people don't want to accept that because maybe it is hot. Maybe the guy moved the hose down. We don't have that tight of a control. He says he has a control. So that's why the frumer people will not use that thing. But to say that it's a non-kosher shchita, chas v'sholom.
Okay.
Okay. So now we move back to our glot and Beis Yosef, Shechita, etc. So once the OU stopped doing that, we have this type of thing. As time went, they started pushing into the industry that we have to have Chassidus Shechita. What is Chassidus Shechita? So I've approached a number of them because I've visited a tremendous amount of plants in my life. And basically, it's not mikveh, because I've showed a lot these so-called Chassidus Shechitas that they are shechting even when the people did not go to the mikveh. Like I was in one poultry shechita where I asked the Rav Machsher over there, I said, do you insist that your shechtim go to the mikveh? He says, badink, they have to go to the mikveh, you can't shecht for me. So I said, how many shechtim do you have today? He says, 5. I said, well, the mikveh, there was only one wet towel this morning.
Right, and what you're referring to is the Mordechai in the beginning of
correct.
Chulin.
Yes, that Mordechai.
So even though correct. The Mordechai says, like, Kaimelan Kavasei.
Yes, but I looked at it. It's not that I hold that a Shochet has to go even because of the Mordechai, but I asked this Rav that's taking care of the Shechita, if you insist they have to go to the thing, you can't accept that Shechita if they didn't go to the mikveh.
Right.
And he did accept it. So I told him, I said, you had 4 yeshachtim, definitely didn't go to the mikveh today. How are you accepting it? He says, well, I should tell my tzibber that we don't have any chickens this week. I say, that's correct, which they didn't.
Well, but even Rabbi Shane, just respectfully, that the Mordechai says it's a problem like Tavol or Kerry. So it could be that they didn't have that issue that day, that they're makbar on it like the Mordechai, but they don't go every day.
But he has no idea what it was. He didn't know they didn't go to the mikveh. But if he says, not also Mordechai, he says, I have my shechtim, I tell them, they must go to the mikveh before they shecht. If that is your standard that you want, he has not complied with your standard. So you don't use that shechita.
Okay, so go back to your let's go back to your. So we said you have glot, then you. I'm sorry, you had the non-glot, then you were talking about chassidus shechita.
So then they started this thing chassidus shechita. So it's not where they stem from, because there are others that wanted shecht by the so-called chassidus shechita, like a Sfardi. And they tell him, you know, you're not the chassidus. He says, what do I have to do to be a chassidus? They say, well, you have to wear Shabbos Ashtraimel and wear the begodim, and we could accept you, and they accepted him. That means it doesn't make a difference from where he stems from. So what is the chassidus shechita? So everything that I've checked out with them, the only thing I was able to determine chassidus shechita was that years ago, there was two ways of shelling sakinim. One is tzadechad, and one is shnei tzadodim. So the Litvashe used to do tzad echad, and the Chassidus did shnei tzadim. So now all these shchitas have shnei tzadim. So basically, we could call them all Chassidus shchita.
Rabbi Shane, is a Chassidus shchita more expensive than a non-Chassidus shchita?
Well, what they did was they limited you by which shachtim are going to be used, and they used this thing of Chassidus shchita to take control of the market. Just like the Hamisha, wanted to take control of the kosher markets. They made a thing, everybody has to use Hamish. Are they better than the other ones? Absolutely not. Is the Chassidus Shechita better than what we have in Litvashe Shachten that we had all the years that checked it by Breuer or by any other places? Absolutely not. And forget, there's a lot of Mislamdom by the Chassidus Shechitas, which is a lot of people don't want the Mislamdom. The Litvashe ones had people that were tremendous Talmidei Chachamim.
What do you mean Mislamdom?
Islam means that they're students, they're learning. Another guy, you could see right away how he's shechting, that he's not an old-timer over here. And, you know, you want to learn shechita, go learn someplace else. But when you're shechting over here, for me, for the tzibur, this and that, you have to be an experienced shech that has a lot of shechita under your belt. Not that you're fresh out of the thing, because basically there's always problems that happen by a new shechit.
Okay, so you have the chassidus shechita. So you say they took control of the market. Is it more expensive or is it the same price?
It's definitely more expensive. It's yet more. What it is like this. Let's say you have in certain areas of Chassidus Olam, they want to have, which we know, they want flanken. When the purveyors are selling to those areas flanken, it's $1 a pound more because this is what you want. So wherever they're shorted, if you would take that same so-called Chassidus Shechita, you sell it in a store in the Midwest, you get it a lot cheaper than buying it in the metropolitan New York area. Because they know over here they could get the price out of the public a much higher price than they could get over there. Because over there the fellow says, I don't need this kind of shechita. I could take anything. There's other OU shechitas around. Why do I have to pay for the so-called chassidus shechita? And they wouldn't pay for it. And because of that, the price is lower in those places. So they had that. There was a butcher that bought all his meat from the Midwest, and he had it shipped out to New York over here until they caught him, and they stopped this thing over here because they want to get these higher prices from them. But calling Chassidus Shechita has definitely raised the prices tremendously on Shechita, besides the fact that we really could have had the non-glot, which will bring down the cost and the volume tremendously.
So is the OU then cheaper than Chassidus Shechita?
Yes.
Okay, so now you're walking me through a grocery and I have a shopping cart I'm buying for Shabbos. What would you tell me? Say, you know, you want to be makbid, eat this. Give me some guidance.
Well, you like this. In Bederach Halam the Shechitas, in veal, which is basically up to 12 months, or in sheep or lamb, you know, these type of things, basically what they're taking is completely, completely glot. That means the slightest sircha there is on any animal that's veal that's under 12 months, they don't accept that. As kosher shechita, maybe it'll be sold as non-glot, but in the glot it doesn't come. So really, anybody who really wants to be makbid, let's call it, that they want to go Beis Yosef and they're eating veal, so technically, if they would take veal, that's what they're really getting. But are the Chassidish places really giving what should be called Beis Yosef is a good question, because the question is now, how do we determine what is Beis Yosef? So we have a few different criterias. Some is called shayish, which is marble. completely, completely smooth. There is absolutely nothing on there. Others will call what we call sticky paper, as you have these sticky notes. When you pull it off, it doesn't take anything from where it's stuck onto, but you could remove it. So they feel that if they take off a sirach and it comes off that easily, they could still call it Beis Yosef. Others say, no, I want to have that it's got to be smooth as shayish.
So who's machmir and who's mekel?
Okay, let's take this from Etzeshrol, what's his name, Rav Machbud. Let's take Rav Machbud. He says, and he spoke to me and another Sfarad Rav on the telephone, that anything that's not shayish, which is smooth as marble, he considers it to be treif. So I told him, you're given Ashgach on a Shechit in South America, and what percentage are you getting over there of shayish? And he tells me he's getting 40%. I said, how old is the cattle? He says he doesn't know. I said, well, I know that it's about 30 to 40 months old. You will never get 30 to 40 months old 40% shayish. It doesn't exist in the world. I said, how many teeth does the animal have? He says he doesn't know. I said, do you know you could tell by the teeth and the shape of the teeth how old the animal is approximately within a couple of months? He didn't know. He says, but when he comes down there, he sees that it's 15%, that it's 40%. I said, do they know when you're coming down? He says, no. So I ask him, who picks you up from the airport? He says, one of the people from the plant. So I said, evidently they knew. I said, do you know that when you come down there, they're bringing in animals that are 15 months old? 15 months old, you're going to find 40% in South America, but you're not going to find it on 30 to 40 months old. He was unaware of that. So I said, according to your standard, your behemoth that's going on your shtempel, that it's Beis Yosef Glatt, is really treif.
Wow.
And he's unaware, and he says, you know, I'm living in Etzstrahl, I'm relying on the Tzevet. Okay, you're relying on the Tzevet, but Lamaisa, that's what it is. You're going these, here, you have now others in
Wait,
South America.
Rabbi Shenai, let's just be clear for our Olam, that even though it's treif for the Sfardim, the Ashkenazim would be kosher, because we're not...
100% correct, that's right. For us, even non-Glatt would be kosher.
Right.
Yeah, like everything the Rabbanot is taking basically is usually non-Glatt. I mean, they really call it's not non-Glatt. They call it Glatt, but basically it's not the standard that we're looking for. They'll go in like the Rabbanot goes together with a lot of these other Shechitas, the Eder, Sheiris, Rabbi Reuben, Rav Lando, this, that, and they have their Tzevet over there, their group, and they have the other ones. Whatever you're rejecting, you're not taking, they'll review and check the lungs and the other parts of the animal if it's acceptable to them. And they accept it. But they also call it Glatt.
So,
but they do get a certain percentage, another 15-20% of what you of your standard of a higher Glatt standard is not what they're taking, and that's what they're supplying to others, which we could really do this all over here in America.
So Rabbi Shane, let's start with Beis Yosef. Who is the highest standard of Beis Yosef, and who would you say is the second standard?
So the question is, what are we really calling Beis Yosef? If we're going to call Beis Yosef that, there's a thing called Kuri Achbash. Kuri Achbash is like a very, very fine little mesh that's laying on top of the thing. If you really move it around, you'll usually get it off without any problems. Others are considering that to be Beis Yosef. Others say, no, even Kari Achbash, they don't want to accept, they want to have Shayish. Let's take one street, let's call Solomon's. I was there last year for 3 days. Nothing at all that's on there, whether it's Kari Achbash or anything else, will they accept as being Beis Yosef. It has to be smooth as could be.
So how old are the behemoths then?
The behemoths over there are about 30 to 36 months. But they're only getting 12%, 10 to 12% of Beis Yosef.
So what
they're not getting 40%.
So they do the first 12% of Beis Yosef, and the next percent they'll sell as Glatt.
As Glatt, but not Beis Yosef.
But for Ashkenazim.
Yes.
Okay, so is Solomon then in your eyes sort of like the highest standard of Beis Yosef?
In my house, basically, I've been using Solomon's, I'd say, for the last most probably 4 years. There are other shechitas that I would use, but that's only if I can't get all the Solomon's, because I felt from what I've inspected and seen and heard from Shachtim and Boitkim and everything that Solomon's is basically on the highest madrega that there is. There is also now another one, which I've at least I wasn't down there yet, but I've heard from Shechtem that there is Birdsboro started doing meat about a year and a half ago. Deschit is in Uruguay. And from the Shechtem, what I hear, that the standard that there is by Solomon's is the same standard they're using over there.
So, Rabbi Shane, what's unfortunate to the consumer is we have probably 10 or 20 different, you know, hashgachas. And, like, we need a consumer's report where somebody could say, you know, this glot is better than this glot. This base yosef is better than that base yosef, because there doesn't seem to be any way to measure. Certainly for the layman, no way to measure one against the other as far as kashrus.
So let me clarify one point. There used to be in South America where you get a higher ratio of base yosef than over here in the United States, because they're more out in the fields, etc. They're raised differently. There is a higher percentage of base yosef, if it's true. So what others have done now in South America, they decided we were getting till now some, whatever it is, 30%, 35% of base yosef, and we were getting 15-20% of non-base yosef. Let's eliminate the non-base yosef, and let's drop down a little bit the standard of base yosef, and they're up to now with base yosef 45%, and they don't take anything else. They're only taking base yosef, and anything coming out of South America by them became base yosef. And that they started about 2 years ago. So you go to a lot of stores in Queens with a lot of Sephardim or these type of areas, you're going to see a lot of meat come from South America from certain purveyors. Everything is base yosef. But it's really impossible. So when I'm doing an affair for others, whether I'm doing a wedding or a mitzvah, whatever else it is, I don't consider that, or I do a hotel for Pesach, I don't take any of that meat and count it as base yosef, because I feel that that standard is completely unjustified.
I understand. So let me take you back to our virtual supermarket. So we're walking through it. So the highest standard, I guess, is the base yosef, because they don't take any sircha. And after that, you go to the non-base yosef shchita. So
no, but over here, but we're going to separate another issue, another item like
okay.
This. There is also asik with nicker. Anything past the 10th rib, usually you have more problems with nicker. So like Solomon's has another brand they call Fischl's. Fischl's, everything is always base yosef. Plus, they don't take anything past the 10th rib, and they don't take hangers, and they don't take skirts. Those things are very hard to be menacher, the hanger and the skirts, and anything past the 10th rib. So if somebody wants to take that he has, that his nicker is done 100%, 110%, and he has the base yosef, then he would buy Fischl's. But that is the only one around that I know of that has these type of standards with, because of the nicker and that it's a base yosef, that if people want to be makbet completely and be makbet on the nicker, they would take the Fischl's meat.
So who is Solomon's? It seems like a real Yirei Shamayim owns it. Who is Solomon's?
Solomon's is under the Skver Hashgacha. It belongs to, I forgot the person's name. The one that's running it is somebody, Fischl Ziegelheim, that lives in Lakewood.
Uh-huh.
And, but they really run, you see, there's also a very interesting thing that comes up by most shchitas. And what happens is like this. If you blow up a lung more than it, there's no reason to blow up a lung more than what it is in the behemoth when it's alive.
And they blow up every lung, don't they?
Yeah, but they blow up the lungs over there. They blow up everything by sheep and lamb. Basically, they very often in a lot of shechitas they don't blow up any lungs. They do a bdikas pnim, and that's when they decide if it's acceptable, it's not acceptable. But by behemoths,
which is a bdiyevet a bdikas pnim, right?
You need a bdikas pnim and a bdikas chutz. But if they find that everything is clean over there, they don't bother. They'll do just a bdikas chutz without blowing up the lung.
Right.
And that they got basically, I think that they said that the Satmar Rav said not to blow up the lungs by sheep, because when you start blowing up the lungs, he was afraid they're going to play around with it and try to take off things that really shouldn't be taken off. And because it's young, it'll come off, so he decided not to. But what happens is when you blow up a lung more than it was at the time of when it was alive, and usually you could tell the lung changes color a little bit. What happens is there's very small capillaries in the lung that'll start bleeding very, very slightly. Some will accept that and just leave it and say it's not a problem. And Solomon's, they don't take any of those lungs that were blown up, and you could see afterwards very, very small little specks of blood starting to come out. They rejected the lung not only as non-basisif, they rejected it as a non-kosher as far as they're concerned, which I told them that you're causing a lot of hezek damage to the owners over here of the shechita, because if you wouldn't blow up the lung more than what you would have to, you would be able to accept another couple of percent. But, you know, it's very interesting. The ones that say they want to have chesidah sheshachtim, they never say anything about the boidkim.
Right.
And a boidik pnim, you need a much, much bigger yirah shemayim than a shoychit, because you don't know what in the world he's doing when his hand is in there. He could remove certain sirchas. He could detach it from the rib cage. He could detach it from a umaluma. He could do many, many different things that you have no idea what in the world is doing. And the boidik chutz is not necessarily going to pick up on that there was a problem. So that's the one that you really have to have the biggest yirah shemayim is the boidik pnim. But
okay.
that they would accept others that are not so-called chassidus shechita.
So Rabbi Shem, let's continue. So you're saying first you have Beis Yosef, you say Solomon's is the good Beis Yosef. Now you buy the non-Beis Yosef, chassidus shalitfus shechita. Is there one that you say is better than the next? Like, how would you rate them?
Okay, so let's go like this. The best you have is Solomon's and Birdsboro that comes from Uruguay.
Who is that? Which?
Solomon's is under the Hashgacha of Hesachtus.
Right, and Birdsboro?
Birdsboro is under Hesachtus, and Solomon's is under Square.
Okay, and then what do you have?
Then you have Ali. Ali Meal Mart is under the Nirbata.
Okay.
So what he has as so-called Beis Yosef or whatever else it is from South America, I don't accept that as Beis Yosef. I would say it's basically regular glot, not any
okay.
Beis Yosef, but
okay.
They're selling it very big as Beis Yosef. The what else do you have there? Then you have like this, you know, the other ones from Agri and Aaron I don't use at all.
Because why?
And because basically there's a lot of issues over there with the Shachtim and the Boidkim, et cetera, they're under a lot of pressure. They don't let them, they're not allowed to talk to anybody on the outside, which they do sometimes, but they get fired and they have a $5,000 penalty if they're found that they spoke.
Okay, and what about, where does OU fit in this picture?
The OU has certain, which I'm not, I know the OU, like on the Birdsboro, on the chicken shechita, on the meat shechita, the OU is on it. Solomon's officials, the OU is on it. Ali and Meal Mart, the OU is on it. Agri, Bashkandat, the OU is on many of them, but I know there is some of them that are also under the OU, which does not have any of these other ones, like I think something Lo and Behold or something, and a few other ones. I'm not sure of the other ones because I've never really deviled into those, because that's not the ones that are negeya much to me.
Now, I know, let's say, a lot of the people from the OU, Rabbi Nachum Ganak, et cetera, and I find
right.
them to be just stellar, very straightforward. I mean,
correct.
These are people you would lend money to on a handshake, and you get it back like a minute to the minute. Just very extremely honest, just no shtick people. I find
that to be the same thing.
And so how would you compare where they give a hechsher to, let's say, some of the others that are out there?
Well, basically, it's like this. From the OU, I would call up. I would want to find out something. Basically, they'll give me a very straight answer. I'll know exactly what's going on. We very often trade information because there's other information that they don't have access to that I do have access to. But I found them to be very, very straight. Maybe a lot of people will not accept certain ones of their standards, what they have, but they have on everything. They have a written psak on it.
Let me ask you a general question because we're going to run out of time. Would you say, in general, Hashgacha in America has improved a lot? Is it better? Is it worse? Is it getting better? How would you quantify, like, just as somebody who's like an international consultant at Kashrus, is Kashrus getting...
Okay, so let's take it like this. There was a few years ago, 12 years ago, Reb Shmuel Birnbaum and Reb Aaron Shechter, among other yeshivas, were trying to bring out and have items made that yeshiva light could use. So they approached the OU and others that what could yeshiva light use, and the OU says, as far as we're concerned, they could use everything. So he says, but we want to have something with a higher grade. We want a Mahadran thing. So he says, go to the Hamish Ashgachas. They're providing that. We're providing to the general public. We're not addressing for these things if you have certain Hidurim that you want. And basically, they really didn't get any place. But what happened is, when the Hamish Ashgachas came into play, whatever it is, 15, 20 years ago, this is what they should have done. But on the end, what happened was, let me go like this. Rev Breuer, when he set up the Kashrus 60, 70 years ago, he got up on the Bimah and he said, I'm going to set up a Hashgacha that will have no Chumris and no Hidurim. Just basic Kashrus. People were stunned by it. So he says, let me explain. When we start off that we want to have Chumris and Hidurim, we might be left with possibly Chumris and Hidurim, but we're not going to have basic Kashrus. I want basic Kashrus. The Hamish Ashgachas have so-called, we thought they're going to come in and make Chumris and Hidurim and have basic Kashrus, but it turned out on the end, you're looking for basic Kashrus, stick to the OU. You're looking for Chumris and Hidurim and no basic Kashrus, go to the Hamish Ashgachas. So, could we say it went up or it went down? Well, as far as the OU is concerned, what I see is they've gone up tremendously. You take most of the items, I say 60-70% of the items, I'm not talking about the dairy or the meat, 60-70% of their items is basically acceptable for Yeshivalite. You go to the Hamish ones, there's a lot of weaknesses. They don't have trained people. They don't have this. They don't have that. You got a problem. But the people I'm saying, get at that Hamish, I want Hamish. But you're not getting based on Kashrus. You got a big problem. So in the Hamish area, Kashrus has fallen. It became basically out for the buck. In the OU, it has gone up tremendously.
Let me ask you one last question. How come Tzar Balachayim is not an issue in Shechita?
I'm going to address now the very interesting thing with Tzar Balachayim you're bringing out. There's certain Shechitas, like in Kiryas Yoel, they insist that the Shechit takes out the feathers by the neck,
Shechitas
by the chicken.
Yeah.
The night is the feathers.
Which is a machlekes of Tzar Balachayim.
Yes, okay, no, the Yehuda, etc. So what I've watched is, by the number of the shechtim there, they'll take out every fifth chicken, they'll take out the feathers. And when he's shechting, he's not shechting in the makom of the feathers. So I went to the Baron Teitelbaum and I said, Gaval Geschnigen, first of all, if you say that the feathers have to be taken out, they have to take it out by every one of them. Now, if the fact that they didn't, and he's taking out and he's shechting not the makom we took it out, so he was just over the rice of Tzar Balachayim, and he's shechting. I say, you know, Mamonashech, either you shecht in the place, so there's a heter of Tzar Balachayim, that it's not Tzar Balachayim because you needed it for the Shechita, but if you're not shechting where you took out the feathers, you only went through the motion, you were over on a deraisa, and now you're shechting. I say, who wants to have such a shecht to shecht?
What about Tzar Balachayim with, you know, the way they treat the animals before Shechita, they're terrorized. Like, do you believe, like, do you think that's an issue?
I've gone through with a lot of them, and I've had a lot of discussions with Temple Graden about it. There are certain things that can be done, and even I was in South America, which they do it with a chain, they tie it down, this and that. It's 95% they don't have these kind of issues of the way they put it, PETA and everything else like it, isn't it? Because I've been in these shechitas many, many times, and this what they're calling the Tzar Balachayim, really, you'll have, occasionally it'll happen well, but there are certain places which I've seen pictures that it is, even Netz Yisrael, the way they were treating the chickens and other kind of things, yes, there is a lot of Tzar Balachayim by a lot of these things, and the question is how to deal with it. I don't know how to deal with it. But most of the shechitas that we have, say in America, even a number of the better ones in South America, you don't have a problem with Tzar Balachayim.
Rabbi Shane, thank you very much for your time. We greatly appreciate it.
Kol tov.
We have on the phone with us from Lakewood, New Jersey, Rabbi Baruch Mordechai Spiegel, who's the Rav of Teferes Pinchas. He's also been a shechit for many decades. He's an expert in shechita. Welcome, Rabbi Spiegel.
Shalom Aleichem, Reb David. How are you?
Baruch Hashem.
I'm speaking to you.
Rabbi Spiegel, could you explain to our Olam, most of whom probably do not know that much about what goes on in Shechita, Shlachtoise, etc., the difference between a Hasidish Shechita, when you see it on a label, between a non-Hasidish Shechita, between when you see something that's a Beis Hashgacha of Beis Yosef on the meat, as an expert in this, explain it to us.
Right. So the thing is like this. Years ago in America, when the Eden started coming over after the Second World War, there was a balabatim around the industry of the shechita, and these balabatim used to work and make the people work on Yom Tovim and, you know, all the getaways, and even on Purim and all these hard times, until the Satmarov came along and he saw that there's a big need that the oil won't eat from this shechita, which a lot of Eden didn't eat meat in America before, because in Europe, how it was is the shechita in the little shtetl would check one cow and that would be enough for the whole shtetl for the whole year. But since it started becoming more of so much more meat had to be produced than in the shlachtaiser, so there had to be more control over it in America. So Satmarov wanted to stellar a certain standard in the shechita. So Mamele, he said he didn't want to fight with them. So he said that our chumas are that we should have shoychim who their wives don't drive any cars and they're makbid on not to have they go to the mikveh and they have beards. So like this, he knocked away a lot of people who were in the industry then who weren't, you know, fry and they weren't such hamish people. So like this, he had only hamish people shoychim. But there's no such thing in halacha wise, there was no such thing as chassidim shechita. Really, no such thing. It was just that chassidim came along and they put themselves into it. Just like chassidim made Bikur Cholim and they made the Tanchus Shabbos and they made RCCS and they made Koni Olam. And chassidim go out and they do it. But the Tzedemarov made kosher Chol Yisrael milk. In the literature world, nobody came about and put themselves into it. The literature world, the Baharan and all the Gedolim came and they built yeshivas. So the chassidim built kashrus, and the literature built Torah. So really, no such thing really in shechita, saying the chassidim is a shechita. The chassidim went, and they went into the industry to make shlachtaiser. If the literature world maybe would open up, maybe they would eat that also, but they don't have it. They didn't produce it. So really, the no really thing in Shulchan Aruch, no such thing as chassidim is a shechita. But there is such a thing in Shulchan Aruch that a shechita should be a year shemayim, a shechita should have a beard. If a shechita goes to the mikveh, he gets more years shemayim, so that's like a big plus. Somebody wants such type of shechita, because also we know that shechita is something that if it's tamei, everything what the shechita thinks goes into the meat, which is brought down in svarim. So maybe they want it chashuv people. Now, the fact is that in the shechita world, we know a couple of, there's a company called Rosenblatt who had yeshiva lights in the last couple of years. The CRC from Chicago, they opened up in Teure Sheshech. It was a gorgeous, gorgeous shechita. It was one of the nicest shechitas around in that Chosheringa light. Somebody called him Avi Bloch, and he did Yohayon. Chosher yeshiva light, which is a gorgeous shechita, and everybody who just knew about it ate from it, because there's no chilik from the chassidus shechita to the litvish shechita, but there's no such thing as a litvish shechita. So when it was called chassidus shechita, people knew that automatically that the people who were involved were elach yidden, they have to trust them. That's basically what chassidus shechita means.
Now, Rabbi Spiegel, you work for the OU as well. The OU is not chassidus shechita, I imagine. So where did they get their shechitim from?
The OU uses chassidus shechitim also. The OU doesn't have any plant who they own. The OU doesn't own a plant. The OU goes into Gizashkocha on Ali, on Myanmar, they give Ashkocha on Bells, they give Ashkocha on all this meat that's produced, it has an OU too. So really, the OU themselves don't have shechitim that is called an OU shechitim. There are plants in America who used to have no Ashkocha, only an OU, and they used, whichever shechitim came about, and they certified him in the OU that the OU was a good shechitim. Had nothing to do with the OU didn't put out a thing that you have to go to the mikveh nafkin, but for shechitim, a shechitim, they wanted a shechitim with a beard. Everybody wants the same standard. Nobody wants less standard. Today in the shechitim world, we want the best, and everybody wants the best extra. It means that shechitim is something that you're eating kosher meat. Somebody wants the best meat. So the Mela, the OU also has their standards, and their standards are very high too. It doesn't... has nothing to do in OU, a litvisha or chassidus shechita. There is enough kemina that a chassidus yid won't eat from somebody who trims his beard, but who doesn't go to the mikveh. Chassidim are more machmas, so they won't eat from such a shechita. A But not in halacha, there's no problem with it at all.
So Rabbi Spiegel, the chassidim that are makbid, let's say, going to the mikveh, are they makbid like the Beis Yosef says that the sheikhtim, this is in Siman Aleph, should be b'ki and b'chafta al at Sifrei HaKodesh?
Nobody's makbid on that.
Are they should be baki in the Shivim Trafis? Are they makbid on that?
The Shivim Trafis, that's something else. The Shoshim doesn't have to know the Trafis. If he's a poetic, he has to know the Trafis. So it has nothing to do with that, really. It's a separate shayla.
Well,
Shoshim has to have Kabbalah on Shita, and if he went to a legitimate Rav and the Rav gave him Kabbalah, he's an accepted Shoshim. In the OU also, the Sheikh doesn't know the Trafis. Whatever, probably if he learned the Shulchan Aruch, then he knows all the Trafis. Because whoever fahed him on it, from the Kadosha and on Beis David, should have fahed him on that also. And if it's in Siman Aleph, then he has to know it to get a Kabbalah on Shita. You can't get a Kabbalah on Shita without knowing the Shulchan Aruch. The Chassidim fahed you on Siman Kadosha, the Litvish should fahed more on Shulchan Aruch. But basically, if somebody has a Kabbalah, then he had to know all the halachim. In fact, I just had a Chassidish in Yaman. Last week over here in Beth Medrash Gevoya, I got Kabbalah on Shchita. The guy knew every thief, every shach and thousand from the garden, backwards and forwards, the whole of the Shchita, and all the Tzavit, with the loss of Chassidish in Yaman. So, you can't, you know, it's not a right statement to say.
So what about, are the Chassidish, let's say, Shchita's makbir on not to use veal, like Ramosha's Chumra?
That's Ali sells veal.
Is Ali a Chassidish Shechita?
Yes. They're about to do it. It's not for Shechita, they sell veal, yes.
And they're not worried that Ramosha says, Bali Nefesh Ein Lu Lechel Klal.
Okay, that has nothing to do with the companies who shech. That's every person on their own. Whoever the Bali Nefesh should be machma on that. You know, actually, you know what I mean? Ramosha wrote his tshuva. And the most old guys on veal for the 80 trafers. I used to shech veal a lot. It's a real, I mean, me personally, I couldn't eat veal because you saw how bad the trafers was. But veal is an American product. It wasn't in the children don't have veal baklava. But here in America, they shech the young calves. It depends which calf, which veal. Red veal, the white veal.
Do they do bedikas on Tzimis Hagidin in the Chassidish Shechita?
Tzimis HaGidin is only on chickens, not on behemoths.
I'm talking about on chickens.
Oh, so now you're going to chickens.
Yeah.
They do, so yeah, sure. Every plant does today.
And every oif they do, or do they just do a sampling?
Every oif.
Really?
Every oif is checked today, and it's a mandatory. OU, Chassidish Shechita, everybody's on the same standard today. There's two mashgishim checking every single chicken that goes by. They check the tzimis hagid.
Now, let me ask you. Say that they're makbid, let's say, in a chassidish shechita, that they should go to the mikveh, or let's say, shave the beard. They shouldn't trim their beard. Are they makbid, let's say, that they should be kaveh, eat them l'toyer every day?
Vada. They make sure, first of all, I'll give you an example. I was just now in a plant in Kosher Mahadran. They make sure that it bells, actually. They make sure that there's two dayanim by every shechita, and the dayanim give shurim in the morning by night, the dafyoimi, and whatever they're learning, the shechita have to come along, and they have shurim. It's the elchi eden. We're talking about the eden who are going away and the learning, sure.
Could you tell us the difference between Beis Yosef and non-Beis Yosef?
Yeah, Beis Yosef and non-Beis Yosef has to do with the bedikas hareya, not with the shechita. Now, the Beis Yosef is that the Ramon and the Beis Yosef have arguments of how many, what's called a sircha, how many sirchas to take off. The Beis Yosef holds one shita, which goes with the Chu with the Rajba, and the Ramon is Mekel, and the Svardim hold like the Beis Yosef across the board. So the Mela, they need to have shita's Beis Yosef because they pass them like the Beis Yosef. We Ashkenazim go with the Ramon, so the Mela, we don't have to be machbed on the Beis Yosef. So that's the nafkamina. When it says Beis Yosef, or it says not, it's talking for Svardish people. People who are Svardim, they only eat Bet Yosef because they are makbid on the Maran. So they can only eat what the Beis Yosef says. It has nothing to do with anything else. Lachlek is the Ramon of Beis Yosef, and people who are Svardim, makbid on Beis Yosef, eat Beis Yosef. Now, Beis Yosef today became a today, when we call Beis Yosef, means that we're talking about that the ray is chalak and they don't take off the any rielach and they can't, it's chalak chalak. So people who want to have, it should be shyish, they want to have a ray, it's very clean, will go if they want to have a besyoisa stamp on it because it's more, less tampered with and it's more hedurim in it. But that's because we are makbar on the besyoisa.
So they're makbar more on sirchas and sirchas atluyas, etc.
Whatever the besyoisa shita is, it's not for now. Whatever the shita of besyoisa is, they're makbar on that.
Okay. Now, can you tell the Olam what's the difference between glat and not glat?
Not glat means that the glat means there's no sirchis on it, and non-glat means you have a lot of sirchis. You have sirchis. Something that has a sirchis is not glat. Something that has real is called glat, but it's not besyoisus.
Is there a shechita in America that you think is a particularly good shechita? You would say this is the one they have the most chumris. It's the slowest shechita. The makbid, they don't do that many. They do more bedikas hasakin. The makbid more. They do maybe bedikas on the ifis as well. Is there a particular shechita that you would say they are a different standard?
I'll answer your question very simple. Any shechita that's run by a kehillah, was run by an organization, it's always better than a shechita that's a private label. That means a shechita that has an organization or has a kehillah has no problem of spending as much money as they need to for all the chumrats, whatever they need. But a shechita that's run privately in the development without making money, so then it's going to be less chumratic and less better than a shechita. For example, I'm just giving you an example. Let's take Satmar, right? That's a kehillah. The kehillah has no problem. Whatever you need to spend, they'll spend. The kehillah, it's not owned privately. But something that's owned privately, then everything is nitty-gritty with the money. So then, we'll have a harder time getting what you want to get than a shechita that's more of a kehillah shechita.
So could you name for us, because most of us are ignorant, like what are the few largest kehillah shechitas and what are the few largest non-kehillah shechitas?
I'm giving you a most. You have London, Kadafia, Square, Satma, you have Bells, Bubba. I'm just giving you a muscle. You have names. You have a name. You have somebody who's in, you know, a kehillah. Then you know that you have more of you're doing a lot better than a private shechita.
And give us an example of a private shechita.
Private shechitas? There are a lot of private shechitas. Offhand, I don't remember.
Okay. I mean, would you consider the OU a private shechita?
The OU is not private, no. The OU is an organization.
So would that be more daima to a kehillah, would you say?
Yes.
Okay. Now, when people say Meal Mart or Ali or Abashkin, would those be private shechitas?
I would imagine.
You would imagine. Okay. Is there anything else that you would like to educate us with?
Basically, this is, you know, people make assumptions on things that they don't know. People should ask their rabbanim, their rav, or if there are people who know about it when they have questions. And the main thing is that we really have to, you know, people should know when they go into a store what they're looking at, what they're buying, and not be fooled by, you know, by things that, you know, politics and all these things.
So, Rabbi Spiegel, let me ask you, we'll end up with a question which you could or cannot answer, but would you say that OU is as good as any shechita in America?
100%.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Spiegel.
Very good. You're speaking about
Shabbat. Bye-bye.
We have on the phone with us from Mexico City, Mexico, a very well-known shaychet, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Derin. Welcome, Rabbi Derin.
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you for having me on.
So, Rabbi Derin, we are lay people. We don't know much about the history of shechita in America, the politics, etc. Could you explain to us the difference between a chassidish shechita, a non-chassidish shechita, Chabad shechita, etc.? Give us the general parameters.
Okay, so I'll do the best that I can. First of all, just so people don't get any misunderstanding, I'm not actually from Mexico City. I just happen to be in Mexico, not in Mexico City at the moment. I'm from Pittsburgh, but as most shochet nowadays, we travel a lot in order to do shechita in various places. But as far as your question, so I think the best way that I would like to address it is there are shechitas today that are referred to by a specific designation. You say Hasidic shechita, that's a very general designation. But more specifically, you'll find, say, Lubavitch shechita. I'm personally a Lubavitch chassid. Although I just want to make sure that I'm not speaking on behalf of Lubavitch and I'm not speaking on behalf of Lubavitch shechita. But I just use it as an example. And then, of course, you have many others. You have, say, a Belzer Shechita, or, for example, you may have K.A.J. Shechita, which would be Kahala Dasi Shurim. So where do these Shechitas get these designations? So I think the way to understand that is by understanding, first of all, how any Hechsher works nowadays. We don't have a universal authority similar to the way it was in the times of the Bayit Sheni, and we have the Sanhedrin, and there was one central authority of Halacha. Ever since the Churban, things became very localized, and each community had its Bezdin, it had its Rabbonim, and they would be primarily paskening and overseeing different things for their particular community. And that is pretty much the situation today. So if you have a shechita that's designated by a certain chug, a movement, the achsidis, what it means is that the bezdin that represents that particular kehila and the rabbonim of that particular kehila are overseeing that shechita, and they are giving, you know, the hechsher, and, you know, for their kehila. And hence, it then acquires that name, that designation.
So what is a chassidish, when you see on the label, chassidish shechita, what does it mean?
Okay. What I think it means is that probably we have to go back a little bit of the history of shechita in America. I think that the situation in the early 1900s, probably up until post-World War II, the matter of shechita, to some degree, was very schwach, was very weak. I'm saying this not from first-hand knowledge, of course, you know, just from things that I've read. There's the famous Rav, I think he was considered the chief rabbi of New York. I don't recall his name right now, but this was something that he fought for.
Rabbi Yankiv Yosef?
Yes. So I read recently a book that was written about his life and you know, the machonas that he waged in order to raise and to upgrade the, you know, the matzot of shechita. What happened after World War II, when there was this major influx of the chassidish ha'olam settling in America, so apparently they were not happy with the situation and they began to arrange shechitas that they were personally overseeing and endorsing. And I think that this was an effort that was primarily from the Hasidic different kehilas, and I think hence this is where the term Hasidic shechita came. So only because it happened to be that it was the Hasidim who had come to America who saw the situation, and they put in the effort to improve the situation, which is probably where this idea of chassidish shechita is coming from.
What does it mean today? Just give us a practical. What does it mean? When you're buying chassidish shechita, what does it mean? It says on the label.
So in my opinion, I mean, I cannot speak for the people who are actually using the term and putting it on their labels, but in my opinion, as somebody who's in this field, so I probably have some kind of an idea. So I would say it means that this is a shita that is endorsed and, you know, run by a Beis Din and a Rabbanim who are representing a Hasidic Kehillah.
Are there any halachic, so in other words, you could have a Litvisha fellow like Rabbi Nachum Ginnack. He wears a short jacket, he has a trimmed beard, right? You could have the Lakewood Beis Din, and then you have somebody who comes from Poland, Hungary, Oberland. He wears a long coat and a gartel. So is a difference who the Rabbanim are? Is that the only difference? Are there any halachic differences?
Okay, so as far as halachic difference, I don't think that there are any fundamental real halachic differences. But going back to the original question, I think that those shkittas that would designate themselves as Chassidish shkittas, they may be marked, they may be very particular about hiring only shachtim who consider themselves to be followers of the Derech of Chassidus.
So for example, so let me ask you a question. You say you're a Chabad Sheikhet, and I know you've shechted for many. Like you say, today, unfortunately, Sheikhtim have to travel around a lot. They rarely have one job. So you say you've shechted for Reb David Miller and for the Star K and for the Magen David and obviously for Chabad. Have you ever, let's say, shechted for, I don't know, Skver, for Visionitz, for Satma, for any of those Sheikhtim?
I have not.
And
no.
Is that because you are not a Skver, you are not a Satmar, you are not a Visionitz, or you are not a Belz? Is that why?
Possibly.
I'm only basing, you said that the Sheikhtim from these, but say Belz or Shchita, they use Belz or Chassidim. Is that what it means? If you buy Belz or Shchita, it means that the Sheikhtim go to the Belz or Rebbe, they go to the big school over there in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they daven with the Belz. Is that what it means?
Well, I don't think it would mean exactly that, because let's assume there is such a thing as a Belzer Shchita, and perhaps their priority would be to use Belzer Shachtim, but I don't think that they would use exclusively Belzer Shachtim. But one of the things that probably is important would be someone who actually, you know, dresses with Achsidic Shadavush, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so let me ask you.
Unfortunately,
let me just ask you a few questions. Marshal, the Shulchan Aruch says in Simen Aleph of Yerideya that a Sheikhet should be a Baki, Bechaf Dalet Sifrei HaKodesh, a Talmud, Bekam a Prakim. Do Chassidish Shechitas Makbid that they should be Makbid in the Chaf Dalet Sifrei HaKodesh?
I don't know specifically that any Shechita actually ever questions a Sheikhet or gives a Kodesh.
So they have to be Baki in the Shivim Treifis. By the Chassidish Shechita, they makbid at the Baki in the Shivim Treifis.
I don't know about the Shivim Treifis, but they would certainly have to be Baki in the Treifis Areya.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah,
but that's already a Kula. That's the Kula of the Dark Yemaisha. But the Beis Yosef says, L'chumr, they should be Baki. The Chassidim makbid that the Sheikhtim should be Baki in the Ayin Treifis.
Okay, so again, I don't think I really don't want to, you know, seem, it shouldn't seem as if I'm speaking on behalf of all the Chassidish
Shechita. No,
I'm
just your guess.
My guesstimate would be that no. I don't know. I've never heard that there is as a prerequisite for a certain Hechsher that you know,
okay,
that the Shechita.
So let me
just
so the Darkei Tshuva,
according to the Beis Yosef, and not be, you know, Sebech on the Kula. No, I'm not aware of anything like that.
Are they Makbid, for example? Do the Chassidish Shechitas give Hechsher on, let's say, a veal?
You mean because of the issue that Rabbi Tendler brought up?
With the issue of Ramesha and the Gris Moshe and Ezer and McDowell and Tzadik Beis, where he says that Baal Nefesh should be marchik from eating veal, are the Chassidish Shechitas makbid not to give a hechsher on veal?
Not that I'm aware of.
Even though Ramesha says that that rove of them are treifis and they need, and besides Bedikas Hareya, are they makbid on Bedikas Bnei Ma'ayim? I just, before we go into the politics, I want to establish whether it's a political issue, whether, you know, you're a member of a certain particular chassidus or tribe, or does it actually have a halachic basis? Is a chassidus shechitus give hechsher on, let's say, foie gras?
Okay, I hear your question. The best that I could answer would be that I don't really believe, and I may be wrong, but I don't really believe that there are any fundamental halachic differences between one shechita or another.
Okay, so let me ask you, if not halacha, let me ask you hashkafa. The number of the, you know, the great Hasidic rebbes, and I can give you the list, say that a chassid, when a shaychet should be makbid to do it with great kavana, to be mild in the tzaitzis of the animal, to, you know, from the Olam HaGashmi to the Olam, do chassidim have these kabbalistic kavanas when they come from, did they learn the kiss fairy and how to be mild in the tzaitzis of the thing, the way, let's say, the Talmidim of the Magid, right, you should have? Did they do it? This is not halacha, this is hashkafa. Are the shaychetim who do that?
Okay, so again, I don't think that this would be a particular prerequisite, although it may be an assumption that a chassidish shchita, for example, like we mentioned before, whether it be a belzer shchita or a smeder shchita, right? It could be that that's the assumption of the rabbonim when they hire the shaftim, and that the chassidish shaftim is that they learn these svarim and that they're familiar with these kavanim. But
okay, let me continue on that line. Let's say, so the Darkei Tshuva brings that a shaychet should be a Talmud Chacham, it should be Baki in Halacha, because it's Loya Moritz Chassid, and you can't have Kavanis if you're not Milei Kreise Bishas. Are they Makbid that they should be Talmud Chachamim, so that you should be able to have the Kavanis of Dari during Shechita? Do they prepare them before they do it or not?
It's a question that I don't think I really could answer. If anything, there would be maybe a general attitude that, you know, the person that they're hiring should not be an amaretz. But to say that somewhere in some in the bylines of that particular hashkocha, I don't think so. It would be a general assumption that when you're hiring a sheikh, you know, you assume that the
So let me ask you another question.
Do you find you've
shechted from chassidim, I assume, for litvisha, if it sounds like for svardish or two, have you found that, let's say, the litvisha shechtim are bigger amaratzim than the chassidish shechtim?
No, that's not by any stretch of the imagination, no. For that matter, I would not even go as far as to say that they're lacking in Yiddish Shemayim either.
What is the difference then? You're saying the only difference is do you belong to that? So in your experience, is there a pricing difference, let's say, between a chassidish shechita and a non-chassidish shechita? Or maybe you wouldn't know that.
There may be. But again, the bottom line is, like you just mentioned before, and like I said at the very beginning, it's more about people who will buy a certain shechita because that's what they're familiar with. These are the rabbanim that they're saying chacham, and they're relying on them, and basically that's what a person just makes that choice because these are the people who I believe are looking out for my interest, and then pretty much that's what it is.
And is there a difference between Chabad shechita and other chassidish shechitas?
Like I mentioned before, I don't think there's a fundamental difference when it comes to the actual technical halachas of shechita, of any of the shechitas, for that matter.
What about Yerushamayim? What about Yerushamayim? Is there a difference in the Yerushamayim of the different shechitas?
So how do you measure Yerushamayim?
In other words, do they feher the shaychtim? Do they see if they have kaveh itim l'toira? Do they check that they're talmidei chachamim? Do they give them a feher? Are the shaychtim for starkei less yirei shamayim than, let's say, for Chabad or the OU or vice versa?
I would never say a thing like that. I would absolutely never say that. First of all, I mean, who are we to judge someone's Yiddish Shemayim?
So yeah, is there any, so Rabbi Darren, is there any shechita that you would say, here is a shechita, that there is a fundamental difference, that they have the Rav Bransdorf is chumris, the boidik, they don't use veal, or they don't use the rearim, they're more makbid on bedikas harayim, that they're makbid on tzai misagidin. Could you think of a shechita in America that if somebody doesn't want to go after cultural labels as to which particular kehillah, here are people that are more makbid, that they don't do 800 chickens an hour, they only do much less because they actually do bedikas of the gidin. Is there anybody like that?
There probably are some discrepancies between one shechita and another about some of the issues that you bring up, but I really don't think that they are fundamental differences. You could have a shechita, for example, that would insist that a shechet not shecht maybe more than 30 an hour, and maybe another would be fine having a shechet shecht 45 or 50 an hour. Okay, I don't think that's a fundamental difference. It may be, you know, some chumra, you know, that they could perhaps feel that, you know, they're doing it a little bit better than somebody else. But as far as apsak halacha, right, that's not apsak halacha, that's a technical thing. You know, is 30 to an hour too much? Is 45 an hour too much? Back to Shechita of Gassus, which is really more my forte. I don't know of any real fundamental difference between any shechita that I, you know, I'm familiar with. I'm not familiar with all the shechitas.
Do you do nefichas harayas by all gases? Today?
Oh, absolutely,
what,
of course. Yeah,
And what do you do by sirchas? What is accepted standard for sirchas?
Okay, so now you're actually getting into a very interesting field over here, interesting, you know, part of this whole situation. So sirchas, of course, is halacha shulchan aruch, you know, the areya that's misrach is a treifa, right? But then there's such something which is called a rear, which is not considered to be a sircha, right? And everybody accepts rearim. And the reason why everybody accepts rearim is because otherwise people, you would have to just stop eating meat, because it's rare to find a behemoth with a reya that does not even have a rear. I mean, it exists, but it's not very common. But the real question comes up as to, where are you going to draw a line between what you call the rear and what you call a sircha? Okay, so that's already getting a little bit more complicated. Now, that could be an area in which you may find a difference between one shechita and another shechita.
Right, well, for example, except in veal, Rabbi Darren, in veal, I mean, they take, basically, they take every sircha, they turn it into a rear. I mean, a machmir would say no.
No. Okay, so again, I'm really not that familiar with what goes on with veal, but when it comes to veal, at least, you know, from what I know and what I did when I did check veal, is that, and the way I was taught, is that by your veal, you don't even take a rear. As a matter of fact, there's even a term called a kelbenerglat. Kelbenerglat means that it is absolutely 100% clean, not even a rear.
Rav Darren, what you're basically saying is that, in your eyes, that the shechita in America is pretty much standard. And for the most part, the label you see from the good hechsherim, and when I say good hechsherim, it could be kahal, it could be OU, it could be satma, it could be labavitch, and the difference is more about which kehillah bezdin is on it.
Primarily, that would be my opinion. Primarily, yes.
Rabbi Darren, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it greatly. Is there anything you want to add on to this?
No, it's, I just hope that I answered your questions and I was as clear as I could be.
Thank you very much. Okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Call
to
Rabbi Darren. Bye-bye. We have on the phone with us from Lakewood, New Jersey, Harav Aaron Baruch Epstein, who runs Epstein's Meat, the famous establishment. I think it was founded still when Reb Aaron was alive. Correct me if I'm wrong, or not much later than that.
Wrong.
Yeah. Lakewood, New Jersey. Certainly when Reb Schnee was alive. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
For many decades, welcome. He took it over from his father. Was also a Vgacha Shavid. Welcome, Rabbi Epstein.
Thank you very much.
So, Rabbi Epstein, we're doing a program on Hasidish meat, on Beis Yosef meat, and on non-Hasidish meat. Is there a pricing difference between the three categories?
The pricing between three categories? Not really. I can't say that there is. For example, I'll give you an example, and I'll break it down to you the best of my ability. Empire Kosher Poultry is not a Hasidic shechita. It's a Litvish shechita. It's under the KJs, and there, chicken cutlets are a lot more money per pound than Kirishiel chicken cutlets. But chicken legs in the Empire department is a lot. Chicken legs. In Kirishiel is higher than in Empire. Why? Because what happens is that it's supply and demand. In the Freie Welt, in the non-yeshivish Hasidish world, chicken tops, chicken breast was the right thing to eat. Was something that they eat. Chicken legs is a new zach that we eat. That the yeshiva light that everybody eats because it's a much cheaper part of the chicken. It weighs less, and it's supply and demand. So if you're going to go buy chicken legs in Empire, it's going to be much cheaper than if you buy it in Kirishiel. But if you're going to buy, or Birdsboro, or Pella, or any shechita out there, Marvard, or however, but chicken breast or cutlets, as they call it, is more higher in the Empire industry because that's what they service the people who is more of a supply and demand.
So be it Bell's, Kiryas Yoel, Chabad, Empire, Star K, it basically boils down to supply and demand, what demand that happens to be for that particular product in that market.
Right. Right now, I'm talking now not as a professional as someone that works in the industry. I don't know numbers. I don't know anything. But to my understanding, most of the meat now that's coming in from Uruguay or Mexico is Beis Yosef Shechita, and that is much cheaper than the American meat that's here because it's a cheaper product. You understand? So you can't say that Hasidic meat or Beis Yosef meat is more of a money if it's not an advert of supply and demand. The bottom line is supply and demand. Cheek meat, flanken, sweetbreads, pickled tongues cost more because of supply and demand. It's not because Hasidic Litvish or something like that.
So the same thing, it's not just by Eifis, it has to do with meat as well, the same rules you're saying.
Of course. That's the whole economy. And plus, meat is a commodity. So that's why meat goes up and goes down. It really never comes down. But it keeps on going up for that reason, because it's a commodity. And lemaisa, you have to understand, kosher meat is more money because, first of all, we only take the top half and not the bottom half. Remember, we have to compete with the goyim that shoot animals, don't eat mezgichim, Boydik Sakinim, Bdikas Bifnim, and Bachutz, right? And all these people, the Rav Amachshes, they don't have to pay for that. So they shoot them in the head, Sholem Yisrael, and then it saves them thousands of dollars. So what happens is that when a kosher plant shechs, and the bottom half goes to the Goyish market, they have to compete with the Goyim that are shooting. That's what raises the price of the meat.
Okay. In your opinion, and I don't know if you may not have any knowledge, do you find if somebody wants to be makbid on a lot of the chumris, that are brought either in Shulchan Aruch or the Paiskim, that let's say the majority of the shechitas from what we've spoken to are not makbid on, are there any that you know smaller shechitas that are makbid on chumris, like bedikas tzaimis hagidin, bedikas areyas by oifis, bedikas of etc. I can go through. Are there, or is it right. Just basically one standard set of shechita in America?
So let me explain you something. In my store, I sell all different types of shechitas. I sell bird's burrow. I sell Milmot, Alley. I sell Marvard. I sell Solomon's. And I sell something called Pella. Now, Franklin's chickens, everybody knows. Now, what's the difference? But Franklin's is a dollar more a pound across the board, or more. But the reason is because Franklin's shechita only checks 2,000 chickens a day that I know of. However, Kirisiol, Birdsboro, checks 50,000 chickens a day, and Empire checks 100,000 chickens a day. This is based on numbers, you know, give 10, give 20. I'm not saying exact numbers because I don't know, but that's why on a smaller shechita, you have more cost. That's why it costs more money. So you want to ask me a question. I deal with a lot of Rosh Hashivas, a lot of frum people. You want to know if the frum people and the Rosh Hashivas and the Rebbes are makbid? Yes. They're makbid because they are makbid.
Well, what are they makbid on? Baruch, what are they makbid on?
They're makbid to make sure that everybody knows you have a small yeshiva or a big yeshiva. If you have a small yeshiva, you know, they're metapel more with the bachrim. It's much easier for a bachrim to steig than a big yeshiva, which a bachrim will get lost.
But Baruch, respectfully, you could have a small yeshiva that has a staff of 2 boys, a staff of 2 to 50, and you could have a big yeshiva that has a staff of 50 to 250, and they'll have a much bigger staff. So I think that rule is a sort of a lopsided, very arbitrary rule.
No, it's not a lopsided.
It's the amount of shaychtim per amount of chickens. It's the amount of time they give them so that they could do bedikas hasakin after X number of ifis. I mean, it's not just a matter of, because you could be understaffed in a small place and overstaffed in a large place.
That's good. You're right. I can't argue with you, and that's 100% true. But if you have 3 guys salting 2,000 chickens, or 3 guys salting 50,000 chickens, I'm just breaking it down to you.
But let's say you have 100 guys salting the 50,000 chickens, then the numbers don't add up. So just saying, look, because it's smaller, it's better, I don't know about that. There are smaller yeshivas that may be better than Lakewood, and there are smaller yeshivas that are much worse than Lakewood. I don't think there's a rule like that. I don't mean that, Rebaruch. Are there shechitas that they come out in Beferish and they say, here are 10 coolest that we do not accept?
No,
we do not.
No one does that. What do you mean we do not accept it? I don't understand the question.
There's a lot of coolists that, for example, I'll start all the way at the beginning. There's a machlekes, how much bedikas? The Ramah says you only buy the reyes, and the Beis Yosef is makbid. You should do much more than reyes. Do we have shechitas that say we do not accept the kula of the Ramah? Right? Do we have shechitas? You don't have to be baidik. The time is agidin meikar adin, right? According to the marshal says on a miyut einim matzli our he says yirei shemayim our minig is to be baidik. None of the big shlachtays do that. Is there somebody who says, well, we're makbar on the chumra of the marshal, we're makbar on the chumra of the ramah? Are there shechitas like that or not?
What do you mean most of the shechitas shlachtays don't? Most of the shlachtays do. They check in the morning. I think the first 300 chickens, and it's like how they check the strawberries. You see,
right,
but
the marshal says you baidik every single one, right? So is there anybody who says, you know what, we're going to be machmer? Like there's so many chumras. Do you know shlachtays that won't do veal because Ramosha holds their treif, or Yerei Shemayim shouldn't eat from them? Do you know Shlachtheise that won't do Shnapt Gens because there's the Taz, the Bach, the 100 Paiskim hold at the treif? Is there any who have a halachic difference in any of the Shlachtheise to your knowledge?
No, not that I know of. Reb Moshe on VO had a stickle Torah that I personally asked Reb David and Reb Reuven Feinstein, and they all said that the VO is good.
Well,
so I don't know the truth for Reb Moshe. I know the truth.
Shalos the truth is Igros Moshe and Ezer Dalat Simin Tzadik Beis.
Right, but that was a different way because the way they did it was a Shalos Atar B'Lachayim, and they used to box them.
That's the second half of the tshuva. That's the second half of the tshuva. But he's also talking about they used to feed them the liquid food, which they still do.
Right. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a buck in it. But everybody gives ashgach and everybody eats the veal. I mean, a lot of people do. Most people do. You don't eat veal. I sell a lot of veal, my friend. A lot.
What about gestopped gens? Do you sell that too?
No, I don't even know what that is. I know now.
Foie gras. Do you sell foie gras?
I do not sell foie gras. I don't know who Dashgok is on. I think it's under OU.
Right.
And my Rav Amash doesn't approve of it.
Ah, okay. It's always been. Look, we found one chumrah.
It's not a chumrah. Maybe he just doesn't know what's going on in the shlacht, is there?
There's many paiskim on the Shulchan Aruch who say you don't eat it because it's a shayla of Nika Vavesht. Do you know anybody who's makbid to make sure that there's no zrik is karav levesht because of Nika Vavesht by either gases, dakis, or ifis? You know anybody who's makmer on that? Meretz Yisrael, because
yeah,
there are other rashtritas that are.
Okay, there's a lot of people that don't eat meat, and there's a lot of people that don't eat chickens today. I know a Kosher person. I don't want to say his name. I know his name in Lakewood. He's a Babusta guy in Lakewood. Babusta guy. He's a Babusta Rav in Lakewood who shechs by my shechita. And I'm a knocker for him. I sold it for him. And in the last 3 years, he doesn't eat chicken anymore because of the shayla of the zarikis, of the min, of the crossbreed that's going on.
Reb Baruch, thank you very much for sharing your expertise and your time with us.
My pleasure. Anytime. Scribe.
Cult of Agatha. Bye-bye.